So please welcome Michael Kaplan.
I can't really claim that this is a true story. This is a potentially true story. You know, or actually, it is a story that is seeking the truth. There is a family legend that my mother has told many times in the past about me and my fifth birthday party. I had about six friends that came over. Each one brought a birthday present, and they were all piled on a table. Despite that, when we started playing party games, I was just wildly competitive, kept winning the games, kept insisting on taking the prizes that were obviously meant for the guests. And in the face of this ungracious and unfair behavior, all the children left the party. Now, this is a story that has shaped my view of myself and my capacity for selfishness. It's not a pretty tale. But recently, I've started to poke at it a little and wonder about it because, you know, there are some logical holes in it. I mean, first of all, I don't think any five-year-old would leave before the cake. I just don't think that's in the nature of a five-year-old. Also, of those six five-year-olds, I don't think that one of them could drive. So, you know, there had to have been parents and mobilization and change of plans. And, you know, it must have gotten messy and complicated and maybe even a little heated. So did my mother leave all of that out of the story? Well, she has been known to play fast and loose with the facts, particularly when it kind of improves her role in the narrative. I mean, I'll give you an example. When I was 12, she quit smoking, and it was really hard for her. And one night, we went out to a Chinese restaurant, my younger sister and myself and my parents. And the moment we sat down, my mother picked a fight with my father. I don't remember what it was about, but it was like if she couldn't have a cigarette, she was just gonna smoke my dad in this argument. And she wouldn't let it go, and she wouldn't let it go. And so finally, he barked at her, you know, all right, stop it. And she burst into tears. And then she asked me to switch seats with her so that she would have her back to the restaurant and nobody could see her crying. And then we ordered a bunch of mushu pork and silently ate our feelings. Now, 20 years later, I heard her tell the story to some friends and some other relatives, and she said, oh God, it was so hard for me to quit smoking. I remember one night we went to this Chinese restaurant, and the waitress came up and gave me a menu, and I burst into tears. And my father and I looked at each other helplessly, you know, like Soviet bureaucrats being airbrushed out of the archives. So this tidy, poetic image of these six children sailing out the front door like so many crackling autumn leaves on a stiff wind, you know, I mean, is that what happened? I mean, because I don't remember what happened. I don't have a single memory about that party other than the memories that my mother planted. You know, if you came up to me later and told me you could prove that I never actually had that birthday party, I would believe you. And if you told me that, you know, in 1965 for a few months, the Earth went off its axis and I never actually turned five, I would probably believe that as well. But I have to wonder, you know, is the family legend really more of an urban legend? And so I've developed a couple of theories about what might actually have gone down. I call the first one the rogue child theory. Mark Leaf was at the party, and he lived on my street. And so he slipped out at some point and decided to go home. And nobody really noticed until it was time for cake, and suddenly there was an empty seat at the table. And then everybody freaked out, and we searched the house and the backyard and looked in front of the house. And then my mother called the Leaf residence, and Mrs. Leaf said, yeah, Mark just came home. Now, why? You know, maybe he wanted to use his own bathroom. Or, you know, maybe he got bored. But I think that in this case, my mother assigned him a motivation that reflected her feelings about the event, that it wasn't fair what I was doing. And that over the years, Mark sort of, you know, divided and multiplied like a paramecium until it was the entire cast of characters that snuck out. Because my mother does have a penchant for exaggeration. Take it from me, you know, I got carsick once on a family trip, and I've been told that I threw up on every vacation that we ever had. Okay, theory number two is the judgy mom theory. Dale Miller was at the party, and his mom was there as well. There were probably some other parents there, but Mrs. Miller was appalled by my behavior and told my mother several times, but you know, my mom was kind of frozen. She didn't know how to handle it. So maybe she gave me a couple of soft warnings and I didn't do anything about it. And I just, you know, kept winning the games and insisting on the prizes. And by the way, I was winning the games. You know, I never get to savor that fact when I hear the story, but you know, good for me. And so, you know, Dale was getting upset, and Mrs. Miller finally said, fine, we're just going home. And my mother could have chosen to create a family legend about the lady who lost her shit and yanked the kid out of my party, but she didn't. And I think it was because deep down, she agreed with Mrs. Miller, and Mrs. Miller shamed her. And in my family, when there's shame, it is followed by one of two things: food or denial. And my mother just denied Mrs. Miller a role in this narrative and made Dale the Pied Piper who marched all those children out the front door. Now that, it has a little truth to it, and it leads me to theory number three, which I call the preemptive strike. And in that one, my mother took matters into her own hands. She gave me a number of warnings that I was out of control. I did not heed them. Finally, she said, okay, the party's over. Everyone go home. Called parents, gave people cake to go. I threw a fit, but that was to be expected, and that was for me to understand what I had done. But what she didn't count on was my father's outrage. Because he might not have agreed with my behavior, but you never pull the plug on a party when people are having a good time. And so they had a big fight, and that was a black mark on their marriage and on the family. And over the years, that mutated into a narrative where she was just a passive observer watching these 6 5-year-olds and their shockingly well-organized protest as they all went out the door together. That seems even more true, but it doesn't address why we create legends, you know, and why we perpetrate myths. And I think it has a lot to do with wish fulfillment and wanting to believe that, you know, the universe is just and is going to somehow balance the checkbook, and that the person who's behaving wrong is going to learn their lesson, and somebody who's overwhelmed is going to catch a little break. See, before she met my father, my mother lived in Greenwich Village. She was very much part of a bohemian scene, and she was into folk singing and art and progressive causes. And, you know, she went to protest rallies with Woody Guthrie and Pete Seeger, and they would get everybody to sing, "This land is your land, this land is my land." And now she's watching her son basically go, "This toy is my toy. It will never be your toy." And I think all of her inner alarms went off. And 15 years before the song was ever written, she had a Talking Heads, "My God, what have I done?" moment. And she looked at her son, who was just being selfish and out of control. And she looked at these six other kids who were whining and demanding, and she looked at the mess in the house, and maybe she took a hard look at her own future. And she closed her eyes and imagined a cool, calming breeze strong enough to carry all those five-year-olds out the door like crackling autumn leaves, while I was left in the living room to think about what I had done.